Hello, I'm a Mac.
And I'm a PC. What's with the big boy clothes?
Oh, this, just got back from a meeting, so.
Why? Why were you at a meeting?
Yeah, I do work stuff, too. Come on, I've been running Microsoft Office for years.
Microsoft Office, work stuff. Oh, boy.
What?
Oh, I knew this day would come.
PC.
I just need to sit down. Oh, wow.
There's plenty of work out there for both of us. I don't know why you're acting like this.
Why go on? Just let me lie here and depreciate.
The best 30-plus minute album conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Arifon Elijah. Join me today, he's that guy who loves to sigh. And the managing editor of Cult of Mac, Lewis Walls, is here.
That's great. I'm the lord of the sighs.
I thought you were going to give me a long, hot sigh. Let me hear it. Oh, there it is. I feel better already. Also with us, he's smelly and dreadful. And he looks like Austin Powers' twin brother. Is it a fair assessment, Leander Caney?
Yeah, baby!
That's what I thought. I've been looking for the perfect opportunity to use that sound clip, and I finally got it. Leander, the smelly, dreadful one, he's not here today because 5 minutes before we started recording the show, he started whining and whimpering about, I twisted my ankle or twisted my knee on my bicycle, which I don't even know how does one twist your knee on a bicycle, because they just, your knees just go up and down on a bike. How do they twist, Lewis? Tell me.
Yeah, I didn't pressure him for details on exactly how he injured his knee.
Yeah, right.
Maybe,
because
it's
clearly a farce.
Yeah.
He's gonna stroll into the Cult of Mac office tomorrow. And he's not going to have a limp or anything. Anyway, he said he had to go to the doctor to get them to look at his knee. And what are they going to do? Put their stethoscope on it and listen and then say, yep, it's twisted. Better not put any weight on this for the next week.
Yeah, better not go on a 100-mile bike ride.
When is the bike ride?
I think it's this weekend.
Oh, give me a break. This whole thing is a ruse. He didn't twist his knee. He's going on a 100-mile bike ride this weekend with a twisted knee.
Yeah, I don't know.
Not
we'll
going to happen. Not going to happen.
We will see.
So if you see a British guy in a Kangol hap going 15 miles an hour down the road in a full latex outfit, you might have just spotted Leander Caney. Of course, when he's riding his bike, he puts the Kangol hat on it backwards, so he's more aerodynamic. But that's okay. We've got me, we've got Lewis, and we've got an outstanding show for you guys this week. Here's the question. What's next for Apple? The iPhone market, it's constricting, and Apple is selling fewer iPhones, a lot fewer iPhones. We'll actually talk about this in a little bit. And what's that next big product for them? That's something that Lewis and I have been thinking about. We're going to talk about that. Also, Apple just had their investor call, which is normally very boring, but they had a crazy quarter, and there's a lot of really interesting stuff that happened in the last quarter that I think will be fun to talk about. And we're not just talking about making tons of money, but the stock, the Apple stock, has been on this wild roller coaster. I don't know if you guys follow Apple stock. I do, because I own some, full disclosure. It's been going all over the place. And I thought it would be fun to discuss that. So we'll talk about the fun parts of the financial call. We'll talk about iPhone, what's next for Apple. And then we're going to wrap up with an all new What We're Into. Now, this is the segment where we talk about stuff that isn't necessarily tech related. Sometimes it's movies, it's TV shows, it's video games, and we can't work it into the show usually. So we have a whole new segment, or a whole segment that we call What We're Into, where we work this stuff in for those new listeners who don't know what they're getting themselves into. It's going to be a fun time. Make sure you stay tuned to the end. Before we dive into all the fun, Lewis, let's talk about Dashlane, everyone's favorite password manager. And let's try to talk about this for 1 to 2 minutes and not like 5 to 6 minutes. How's that sound?
What are you trying to put a crimp in my style? I start talking about Dashlane?
No, actually, that's not fair. Just talk about it for as long as you want.
Let me pull up a seat here.
Yeah.
Well, what do you want to know? Dashlane. I got to say, I used to be one of those people who just constantly reuse the same password because, you know, it's just too hard to keep track of them, right? Uh-huh. It's too hard, but it's also too stupid. Ever since I started using Dashlane, it's much easier. I got it on my Mac, I got it on my phone, I got it on my iPad. everywhere I go, I save these things. I can, the wife and I can share passwords. I can share, because we use it at Cult of Mac. Leander and I can share passwords to our, company Twitter account or whatever. And please don't try and hack it. Please don't. But what's that?
And team members, right?
Yeah. Share with anybody, anybody on the team. So it really makes it simple to store these long, super complex passwords. I mean, I was changing one in something the other day, and you can generate them with Passlane or generate them with Dashlane. And there's a slider on there. You can have I don't know how high it goes. You could have 30 characters, a million, I don't know.
It's
a lot,
absurd.
A lot
it's
of
absurd
characters.
How complicated you can make
and
it.
For some reason, I had to copy one into a field that I was changing because, every website uses things differently, right? So Dashlane generated one for the one thing, but I couldn't copy it in the other thing because the stupid website was coded funny. Anyway, I started typing it. It was, oh my God, it was like a just the most insane gibberish. Nobody could ever crack that, I don't think. I mean, maybe, I don't know, whatever. So, but it
Vladimir
was like
Putin
30
could,
characters, all
force.
These different up, down, sideways. Oh my God. I almost had a stroke just trying to copy it, when I had it right in front of me. But anyway, yeah, it makes it very simple. I'm very, very excited to be able to talk about Dashlane as our official password of Cult of Mac. Because it's actually made things very simple for me.
And if people want to try it, they can use it free on one device, correct?
That is correct. One device.
So there's no reason
not
to try it.
Yeah. You go to dashlane.com/cultofmac. You sign up there. You just download the thing and you can use it, as you said, one device. You'll find out pretty quickly that you like it. And then you'll want to start paying for a annual fee for a premium version. That way you'll be able to have it on all your devices, which I know everybody has, more than one device, right? It works on computers of all kinds, Mac, Windows, works on iOS, works on Android, all these things.
It's nice, too, that it works on cross-platform, so you can use your passwords on Windows and on Mac, and you don't have to go to your iPhone and open up the system preferences or the settings and look for your password inside of iOS, which is what I always have to do.
It's much easier in iOS now with the latest version of iOS. Dashlane and other password managers, they all just kind of integrate with iOS a lot more easily now. So I got to say, if you got a bad habit, if it seems like, it gets hard. It is hard. I mean, you've got hundreds of passwords probably, and you do have to go through and change them. That's the reality. Unless you want to leave yourself open to somebody somewhere getting a hold of one of your passwords and reusing it, especially if you're reusing them, that's just like the worst thing you can do. Even if it's long and complex, if you reused it and it gets hacked by some data breach somewhere, bad news.
Definitely. You don't want to get Putin'd, which is what happens if you don't have a secure password. Vladimir Putin comes in and he steals your data, and you need to prevent that at all costs. So
you do not want that.
You don't want to get Putin'd. Dashlane.com/cultofmac. Dashlane.com/cultofmac. By the way, does my voice sound any different than it did, 5 minutes ago?
I don't know.
Check. Oh, I was just curious because I wanted to give a shout out. I switched the podcasting mixer that I'm using today for the podcast for the first time, which is how I was able to bring in that.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
I'm using the Rodecaster, the Rode podcasting mixer. I was waiting for them to update the firmware and add multi-track support, which they did. And so I started using this, and we tried to use this mixer last show, but I couldn't get this echo dialed out. And finally, I finally figured out how to do it. And I implemented the mixer today, and it has all these great effects built in, which is cool. And I can record or play sound effects and stuff throughout the show, which you just heard. But as I was setting my microphone up, I didn't realize I had every single one of the processing effects turned on. So there's all these effects built in. There's a compressor, a de-esser, ducking, high pass filter, a noise gate, and then my favorite, the oral exciter.
Ooh, I love the oral
which
exciter.
Which I had turned on. Should I try it? The oral exciter.
So
here's me without oral exciting, and then here's the oral exciter turned on. Hold on. Here we go. Hold on. Oh, now the oral exciter's turned on. How does it sound? Can you tell? Check. Airfan Elijah here with the Cultcast, America's favorite Apple podcast. Yeah.
definitely got a little more attack. I'm going to encourage you to be sure to pronounce that Arl exciter. Arl.
Oh, my bad. Small distinction. Arl, 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 Arl. Check, check, check. The Arl exciter has been turned on. It also has an effect called Big Bottom. You ready for Big Bottom?
Whoa.
I think this is going to add
Brace yourself.
It's gonna add some Freddie Mercury to this track. Ready? Here we go. Oh yeah, Big Bottom activated. The Oral Exciter. I mean the Oral Exciter and the Big Bottom both activated on Airfront Elijah's voice on Cultcast, America's favorite Apple podcast. Yeah. How's that sound?
I really feel like I brought a knife to a gunfight now, man. I had to find myself some kind of way to jack up my own voice and really accentuate the size.
Just do it with your diaphragm. You can go Casey Kasem and emulate all these effects that you're hearing now. I'm going to turn these off because I don't want to use them for the first time without actually doing a hearing test. Anyway, as you were starting to talk about Dashlane, I just realized that these were all turned on because I switched channels like an idiot right before we started recording. This is why you do not implement a new process or a new piece of gear, an untested process or untested piece of gear into a podcast for the first time on an actual show. It's a really bad idea. Okay, let's see here. Let's talk about some Apple stuff. And actually, Lewis, I'm going to mix stuff up because I think it makes sense to start with this news story that came out yesterday about iPhone shipments. Since this is a large part of Apple's story and a large part of what's next for Apple. Many of you know, iPod, it transformed Apple into a company that was much larger and much more recognized than it was previously. And if that's true about iPod, well, the iPhone took it into the stratosphere. Many of you know, Apple makes most of its money off iPhone. I think in the last quarter, it made 54% of all of its revenue just with iPhone. So half of Apple is being funded by just the iPhone. It's one of the most popular products ever released by any company ever. Well, this story out yesterday, Apple shipped an estimated 36.4 million iPhones worldwide in Q1 of 2019. That's a 30% year-over-year decline, a 30% decline year-over-year. The decline in sales led to Apple losing the number two worldwide smartphone vendor spot to Huawei in Q1 2019. Huawei shipped an estimated 59.1 million smartphones, which aside here, have you ever seen anyone with a Huawei cell phone?
Are they even legal in the States?
I was just going to say that. I don't even think that they sell them in the United States. So China is such a massive market that Huawei is able to overtake Apple just by selling phones there and not here. Right, because Huawei was trying to sell phones in the U.S., but didn't the government had something to do with it because they are worried that China was going to put some type of hardware that allowed them to access people's data on the phones. Like it was a security concern.
Yeah.
And so Huawei is not selling phones in the US for some reason. Well, something having to do with that reason. Do you know any more data about that?
I can't remember the actual details. It's kind of embarrassing.
I don't either. It's neither here nor there, though, as far as the story is concerned. I think the point of the story is Apple has been about the iPhone for 10, 12 years now, right? It's where they make a majority of their money. And now this segment is starting to shrink. Think about the phone business, the cell phone business. It's one of the only devices that literally everyone in the world has. Everyone has a phone nowadays, and everyone wants to access the internet from their phone. It's one of the most prolific popular devices ever. And how is Apple, now that this segment is going to be shrinking and getting smaller, how is Apple going to go forward? What's their next big thing? I was thinking about this, and there's not a lot of segments that exist that are as impactful as the phone is. The only one I could think of is, or maybe one that gets close, is cars. because in the U.S., everyone has a phone, right? And in the U.S., pretty much everyone has a car, although more people have phones than have cars. But besides those two product categories, I can't think of another product that Apple could even attempt to go into that would be as widespread and ubiquitous as phones. Do you have any ideas?
Microwave ovens.
Only one microwave oven per household, Lewis. That would never work.
TVs?
See, that's the thing.
TVs? A lot of TVs?
No, not even TVs. Every family might have one or possibly two. But in a family of five, at a certain point, every single person in the family is going to have a phone. That's five phones per family, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that, I'm not trying to downplay this, yeah. There are a lot of products people have. Mm-hmm. What else? I mean, geez, I don't know, shoes?
I was thinking, the Apple shoe, now you're onto something.
Yeah, self-lacing.
I was thinking, I was thinking maybe underwear before we started recording. Everyone's got to have multiple pairs of underwear, right?
Yeah. Not such a big markup on the underwear.
That's true. Well, they could build in all sorts of amazing tech that hasn't been imagined yet. So that's the issue. Where does Apple even go next as this product category starts to shrink? I don't know. But juxtaposed to this story is their amazing quarter that they just had. Even though iPhone is shrinking, they just had an unbelievably good quarter. In fact, their stock price shot up 10% on the news that they beat expectations by several billion dollars. I think analysts were expecting them to earn between $53 and $55 billion in revenue in the last quarter. And they came out, Tim Cook came out swinging, y'all! And announced $58 billion in revenue in the last quarter, which was massive. And they have made it by having a larger mix of goods that they're selling to people. iPads did really well. Well, I'll let you read this story. Why don't you take it away? Because I feel like I'm kind of eating your lunch here.
You're talking about the wearables? The amazing rise of wearables?
Yeah, well, that was
going to
be the next one I was going to mention. Yeah.
Yeah. So Apple's wearables, that's the division that is Apple Watch specifically, right, and AirPods, it's now the size of a Fortune 200 company. Just that little tiny sliver of Apple is a Fortune 200. Well, tiny. Mm. It's not really tiny.
It's tiny in comparison to the iPhone. But yeah.
Exactly. Relative. It's all relative. Anyway, sales of the Apple Watch grew 50% compared to the same quarter last year, is what Tim Cook said during the earnings call this week. It's just bizarre. You know, he's been talking up the rise of wearables and the growth of the wearables market. And we did a little research as this was happening. Like, what was it? That? And like maybe a year ago, it was like, oh, yeah, it's about the size of a Fortune 300 company. You know, and so now a year later, Fortune 200. Apple's wearables business also includes its home and accessories category. We were talking about that too. Like, what does that mean? I guess that's HomePod. I guess
it's everything. You know, it's not Mac, it's not iPad, it's not iPhone, it's pretty much
dongles,
everything
else. Right?
Yeah.
Maybe dongles
as well. They probably did like a cool Billy just in dongles.
Right. Yeah, especially lately. Anyway, altogether, sales in the March quarter hit a record $5.1 billion in revenue, up from $3.94 billion in the year-ago quarter. So
That part shocked me because the wearables business is now almost as big as the Mac business, which did $5.5 billion last quarter. That's surprising, isn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy.
The Mac business isn't doing much larger revenue since the computers are so much more expensive. And it's just not a very big part of Apple's business. And it hasn't been for a long time. But to think that the AirPods and the watch business is almost the same size as the Mac business now is really surprising.
That's a lot of AirPods and watches.
Yeah. And check this out. So services, you know, all the software services that Apple has been pushing, is now twice as big as the Mac business. It accounts for 20% of Apple's... Yeah, 20% of Apple's revenue now comes from services. So they sold more iPads because everyone seems to love the iPad Pro. They're selling a lot more services. So, you know, charging you for things that you can use with your Mac and iPhone and that type of thing. And all of these different revenue sources are kind of bolstering Apple while the iPhone business starts to shrink. And I hate to say it, but I think that's kind of where we're going to be for a while, and maybe for a long while, where Apple is just iterating on their current product offerings, making things iteratively better year over year, and trying to sell us more services and accessories for things that we already own instead of coming out with revolutionary new hardware year over year. It's strange because when we first started the Cultcast, the iPhone was at the bottom of its hockey stick rise to ubiquity. And it had a long ways to go. A lot of people were still using flip phones and didn't have smartphones. And now the entire market is so saturated with smartphones, and iPhones are a part of that. But it's such a mature marketplace now. And there's not a lot of innovation that is happening in the space because people seem to kind of have perfected the phone, right? How much exponentially better can you make them every year? It's kind of like the steering wheel. Once you get to that point, or a car with wheels, once you get to that point, it was a revolution to get there. But once you're there, how much better can you make it? Well, you can make the engine bigger. You can, you know, add a convertible top. You can make the outside look better, or you can give it bigger tires. But other than that, it's still just a car. And now that's where we are now with the phone business, which is kind of strange. We rode that whole arc all the way to the end. Now it's just, I'm not going to say it's not exciting, but it's not as exciting as it used to be. It's a cash cow for Apple. And I'm sure they're looking for new major business opportunities yet, but I kind of wonder if they'll ever find one as big as the phone was. It doesn't seem to me like there's anything these days that will even come close. Maybe in 10 years there will be something else that we haven't imagined yet. Brain implants, Apple brain implants. Everyone will have one of those, or their Apple glasses. Everyone might be wearing those. Maybe that would be the next big thing.
Yeah, but I really wonder about that one, man. I constantly, every time I think about that, I'm just like, God, is that really? Are people really going to go for that? I mean,
no, they won't. It's like the Apple Watch. There are people out there, a lot of people out there that just don't want to wear a watch. And the same with Apple glasses. I don't think that people will want to wear those if they. Well, a lot of people just don't want to wear glasses, right? But I don't know.
I don't want to wear glasses, and I absolutely have to.
Yeah, they're not something that you would probably choose to wear because they can be uncomfortable and stuff. But people didn't necessarily want to carry a 6-inch phone in their pocket every day either. So, and now people do that without even thinking about it. You know, the other market segment I was thinking about that could be big would be cameras. Although that segment is shrinking too.
Right.
Canon and Nikon are both selling fewer and fewer cameras because everyone has a great camera in their pocket now.
Yeah, I just don't see that being the answer because the iPhone camera is so great.
I don't think it's the answer, but I think Apple is in supplementation mode. What can we add to add some revenue here and there? I mean, look at the AirPods, look at the Apple Watch. Those businesses are, in and of themselves, are not iPhone levels of success, but Apple's making a ton of money on each, and every little thing helps when you're trying to diversify your revenue. I would be really excited to see an Apple camera, like an actual full-frame DSLR, well, mirrorless camera. Pair that with the technology that Apple has built into the iPhone, the computational HDR, except pair it with some really exceptional lenses and an actual mirrorless body, that thing would destroy cameras in the business. No one has anything close to that matchup of software and camera technology. I like cameras, so I would love to see Apple do something like that.
I was talking with Leander about this the other day when we mentioned the wearables business and the home and accessories. So, I mean, think about all the HomeKit stuff that is out there, none of which Apple makes. Mm-hmm. Think about how cool it would be if Apple came out with a video doorbell with some cool features that other ones don't have, or one that just works better, works, you know, with everything that you have. There's all kinds of room for home, you know, smart home accessories that Apple could make, where they could bring their design sense. I mean, that's super important in that stuff, right? And a lot of it, frankly, looks kind of crappy. Mm-hmm. Even the best stuff around, you know, this could look a lot cooler. I mean, I that's one area that I think is probably, I don't know that they're going to get into it, but I think they could have an impact because there's so much stuff out there already, but none of it, I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's really catching on. I think Apple has a way of putting stuff out there and getting people kind of excited about it. And the fact that it works with your stuff makes you say, oh, that's a little bit more enticing, right? I mean, I finally broke down and bought a Nest video doorbell, which I waited forever for Apple to come out with one or even somebody else to come out with one, right? Even just a HomeKit compatible video doorbell. Didn't happen. Couldn't find one. Finally bought a Nest. Not so sure it actually needs to be HomeKit compatible, but frankly, I wish it was HomeKit rather than Nest. Huh?
I'm trying to have everything connected to HomeKit.
Yeah, I know.
It's so inconvenient when it's not connected to HomeKit.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, like with the doorbell, why would it be necessarily more convenient? I mean, maybe so. I honestly, the thing that I would like most about a HomeKit doorbell is that Apple would be running it and it would be more secure and more private than me using this thing made by Google, who frankly, I don't have any idea what they're doing with that data. So
they're cataloging it and using it to sell you hats.
Yeah. They're keeping track of exactly what time I arrive every day.
Probably, dude. They probably are. Yeah. I mean, is there anything that Google's not tracking?
Probably not.
I don't think so. I think they track literally everything about you. And it's one of the reasons, at least in my estimation, that they are pushing into hardware products as well, because they can get inside your home, they can get inside your car, and now they get information from you that they couldn't possibly get from you typing in a search on google.com. They're getting information about where you go, when you go, what time you get up, who comes to your door, what you say inside your house. There was that story a while ago, and now I don't know if Google's doing this. We're getting off into speculative territory here, but there was that story that came out not long ago that Amazon has a huge team of people who are reviewing things that are spoken to the Echo devices. And they say that it's because they are trying to help Echo become smarter. Well, I should say Alexa, since it's a whole series of devices now. So when you speak to Alexa, if it doesn't quite understand what you're saying, it might send that to an actual human to interpret what is being said so that they can make Alexa smarter. And I wonder if Google is doing the same thing. And now they have access to the things that are spoken inside your home. I mean, they're making, Google isn't, but there are smart refrigerators now. They know what's going into your fridge. Mm-hmm. I mean, wait till they start making smart toilets. They're going to know what time you take a dump every morning. I mean, it's like...
Yeah, I just keep waiting for the one with the built-in drug test.
Well, if they could build it in and you would never know. It like analyzes your urine as you're flushing it. And it's like, uh-oh.
Yeah, I predicted this decades ago.
Needs to be searching, yeah.
Drug test urinal. Every corporate America office, just a matter of time.
I people take so many drugs now. I don't mean illegal drugs, but people take so many prescription drugs now. I don't think that would help them in any way, because that thing would be going off, you know, every time someone took a pee, it would be buzzing.
Burn the sensors out.
Exactly. I would like to see them get into some home kit accessories as well. And they could create some really beautiful, polished HomeKit accessories. I'm surprised they're not already doing this. And I don't think they're going to do this, but I would love to see them do it, and that is an actual Apple television. Now, it seems like they're making Apple apps available on third-party manufacturer TVs, so it's probably not going to happen at this point. And it might be smarter of them to not enter the TV hardware market and just let people use their software. But I wouldn't mind having an Apple TV with Apple TV built in, something big, bold, beautiful. Johnny Ive and the team spent 100,000 hours polishing it, beveling the edges. The chamfered edges will be glistening. And that would be another big market segment that they could get into, because as you mentioned, everyone has one or two TVs. Other than that, any other ideas?
You know, I mean, there's always the car, right? Who knows?
That's it. That's the next big thing. That's the one big thing that I think that they could pursue next and actually have it be huge and impactful in the way that Apple likes to have their products be. But you have Tesla out there that's already doing it. For whatever reason, Apple doesn't seem like they are still interested in building a actual car and not just the software. Although Leander would vehemently disagree. Right. He thinks that they still got something under their belt.
Yeah. Well, who knows?
I mean, I wonder.
It just seems like cars. I mean, the last thing I heard about cars was like, basically, you know, 5 years from now, you know, you're not going to be able to buy a gasoline powered car.
5 years from now?
I don't know if it was five, but it was.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, there are like in Europe, there are different places, right, where they've said, oh, we're going to not allow them after like 2030 or something. I mean,
yeah.
It's kind of.
That seems pretty extreme.
It's
kind of wild.
But, you know, I mean, these electric cars do work. I mean, if everybody had solar panels on their roof, maybe that's what Apple should do. HomeKit solar panel roofs.
There you go.
You got to power this stuff somehow, right?
But that's what Tesla's doing.
I think it would be awesome.
It'd be cool.
That's something else that I've always wanted to have. You know, living in California, man. Oh, my God, really? I would love to have solar panels on my roof. But every time I talk to anybody about them, it's so expensive. And it's like, ugh.
To actually buy them?
Yeah. And you know, you know that it's going to be like everything. It's like with an Apple Watch or something. Okay, well, you buy it, and then maybe 2 years from now, it's way better, and you want to get a better one. How do you do that with your roof?
That's right. It's kind of going to be there for a while.
I mean, that's one of the hilarious things living here in San Francisco. You drive around, you see some of these old solar roofs on houses, you know. You know that like they don't work anymore. They're all rusty and weird looking. And it's like that thing is still in your house. It's kind of bizarre. I mean,
here's the thing about electric cars too is I've been watching this this old mechanics YouTube channel called Scotty's Garage. He's like this, I don't even know how old he is. I think he's like in his 60s, and he's building this channel. It's growing to be a huge mechanic car channel. And he talks about electric cars and the technology in current cars. And one of the things he said had me thinking about Tesla. He was like, if you ever are considering buying a newer car, something made after 2012, 2013, that's been in an accident, he's like, never do it. Because those cars have so many electric components inside now, you never really know if one's been damaged and if they've been in an accident. And once they've been damaged, they start to behave erratically. They're not like mechanical components. It's sometimes very difficult to figure out where in the car something is going wrong if it has something to do with an electrical system. You have to track it down, and it's not easy. Sometimes it's impossible. Well, think about Tesla. Teslas are so new. They're virtually all under warranty right now. So if you have a problem, Tesla will fix it. But what happens when those cars are not under warranty? Who's going to fix those cars? Right now, it's just Tesla. Who's going to track down the issues in those cars? Imagine how many electronic components are in a Tesla versus a regular Ford or something like that. It might be extremely difficult to figure out where the problems are, and the parts are really expensive. Those cars are very difficult to repair. You have to be an expert in electric car technology, and most people are not. So I wonder if it's going to be worth owning a Tesla after it's outside of its warranty period. And here's another thing that people don't really ever think about with Teslas. And again, I'm not pooping on electric cars. I would really love to have an electric car, but this is something that I think about, and you have to factor into the price of an electric car when you're purchasing one. The batteries that are inside these cars, they degrade over time. And so their performance is lower and lower as they get older. So you have a car that is able to go fewer and fewer miles the longer or the older it gets. Plus, they're highly sensitive to temperature. So if you are in a cold climate, your Tesla may only have, I don't know, 2/3 or maybe even less distance available when the battery is cold, as opposed to someone who lives in Hawaii who can get the full benefits of range because they live in a much warmer climate. And there are all these issues with electric cars like that make me think, I wonder if they're going to be taking over anytime soon. A lot of people are going to just buy a regular car that they know is going to get the same gas mileage in 50,000 miles as it does when you purchase it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I always talk about this stuff and say like, oh, well, an electric car or something like that. That would be awesome for me. I mean, I live in San Francisco. Most of my drives are less than 5 miles. It might take an hour and a half, but they're less than 5 miles. You know, there's a significant portion of the country where people regularly drive 30 miles, you know, just to get to work, let alone like coming back. And then, you know, what if you go visit family or something? I mean, it's when I go back to Ohio, I drive so much. And there's kind of no way, I think, in a lot of instances where you could actually get away with an electric car. Mm-hmm. But and so that's part of the whole, like, I think this like Silicon Valley kind of ideal of how stuff works, right? It's like, oh, everybody likes this because they, you know, everybody lives here and everybody drives 30 miles max. Like, I hear these people pontificating about this stuff and it's like, yeah, okay, maybe that it might be true that there are a lot more of them, but it's got a long way to go before it could actually be as sort of useful as a gasoline car is in, you know, the Midwest, for instance.
I also wonder what's going to happen to all of these batteries.
Right.
What happens to batteries when they die? I have no idea. Do they just go to some landfill and just get deposited there? Do they recycle them? I really don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Seems like there ought to be some, I mean, somebody knows. Maybe somebody can
tell
us.
Tim Cook knows.
Yeah. I'll bet you they've already investigated that. How could we make batteries for cars, you know? I mean, they're so into recycling in Cupertino, you know? I mean, that has to be, like, if they were going to approach making a car, which it sounded like they were at least considering that, you know that was one of the first things that came up. Like, how can we make this have, you know, no, as least of an impact on the environment as possible? There's no way that they even thought about this for a minute without that coming up.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, Tesla probably has already figured this out.
Yeah.
Neither of us own Teslas, which is why we don't know the information.
Right. We don't know anything. Why are we even talking about it?
We're just speculating. why are we even talking about this? I'm not even sure how we even ended up here.
Took a left turn somewhere.
As often happens.
Got out of GPS.
Well, we were talking about what Apple can do next, and somehow, yeah, we went off-roading, so to speak, and ended up here. Okay, let's go ahead and wrap up with an all-new What We're Into, the segment where we talk about things that don't have to do with Apple, which we just did for the last 30 minutes. So let's continue. You said you had a show that you wanted to talk about this week. Why don't you go first, Lewis? Because I got an epic pick for What We're Into this week.
All right. Continuing my long series of talking about TV shows that everybody else in the world has watched. I just got around to starting. I've been watching The Man in the High Castle. Have you heard of this one?
With Nathan Fillion, right? Is it Nathan Fillion? Don Draper? What's the
you had me like, maybe in the season three or something. I don't know.
Okay.
I've
never seen the show.
Yeah,
clearly.
You know what? Honestly, looking at the list of actors involved in it, I don't think I even have heard of any of them. I mean, there's like one guy on the show that I recognize from Battlestar Galactica. Uh-huh. So are you hip to what the show is about? It's
No, I haven't heard anything about it.
It's an Amazon Prime show. So and it started up in 2015. So it's been around for a while. I'm in the middle of or almost the end of season two. So this is about it's like a dystopian, you know, alternative history sci-fi kind of show. Well, it's not really sci-fi. I mean, it is sci-fi, but it's not like a sci-fi show. It's basically set in the, I guess, the 60s. And it's based on a Philip K. Dick novel. And the whole premise of the show is the Axis won World War II. Mm-hmm. And the Nazis and the Japanese Empire have taken over the United States. And the whole, like, basically, I don't know, it's like from the Rockies East is, you know, the Reich, the I don't know, the American Reich. I can't remember what they call it exactly, but it's basically not. It's run by Nazis. And the West Coast, you know, stuff on this side of the Rockies is run by the Japanese. And it's just a crazy show. It's the thing I really, really like about it is how interesting it is to see how things could have turned out had the U.S. lost the war. You know, it's bizarre. You know, like there's Nazis in the Midwest and they're, you know, sitting around the table, you know, saying Heil Hitler and stuff. And it's just really, it's like the first time that you see that, it's like shocking as hell. You're like, what? I mean, they did a really good job, I think, with the production design, you know, and the most of the show is based in San Francisco, which is also interesting to me. You know, and the whole, like, it's kind of almost like a film noir look, you know. It's kind of dark and grimy, and the Japanese people who are running it, you know, they're dressed like the Japanese people did during World, you know, the soldiers and things did during World War II, and you know, everybody's just mean as hell, it's a pretty fascinating show. And if you're into that kind of like weird, depressing, like alternate history kind of thing, it's pretty interesting.
And it's on Amazon, you said?
Amazon Prime, yeah. And so far there's three seasons out, I think, now. And I think they're filming a fourth one. I'm not 100% sure on that, but it's bizarre thinking about a world where, you know, 20 years after World War II ended, Hitler is still alive and running the country, world.
Imagine how different the world would be. I don't have to say that, though, because you are imagining it. You're watching this show. Yeah, imagine how crazy and different, the world would be if we didn't win that war.
Yeah, it's wild. It is wild.
I was confusing The Man in the High Castle with Castle.
Oh.
with Castle starring Nathan Fillion, which I thought was like a rom-com, but apparently not. The synopsis is, after a serial killer imitates the plots of his novels, successful mystery novelist Richard Castle receives permission from the mayor to tag along with an NYPD homicide investigation team for research purposes. And things get crazy after that. But he's on the cover looking very, very dashing. That's what I was thinking of when you told me The Man in the High Castle.
You know, the other thing I failed to mention here is like kind of what this is all about, you know, with the name The Man in the High Castle. There is a guy called The Man in the High Castle. And it's all very mysterious, like what exactly is going on. But so there's a resistance to, you know, the Nazis and the Japanese, these Americans who are, you know, fighting them and trying to, you know, failing miserably, trying to turn things around. But so they're obsessed with these newsreel, you know, what do they call it? Little canisters of film, right? Newsreels, yeah. and footage that is really mysterious, right? And it's like it shows the things that they find, and this man in this high castle, you know, either produces them or puts them together. I'm not even sure exactly what's going on, but these things show things that aren't in the current reality. Like these newsreels might show the U.S. winning World War II. They show, you know, for instance, when they're one, they're showing some of these resistance fighters, you know, getting shot by occupied forces. But so the people who find them and who are working to get them to this guy, they might watch one and see themselves in this alternate reality doing something, uh-huh. or somebody they know. So the whole thing is a little bit, that aspect of it is definitely sci-fi, right? So I'm not even exactly sure what's going on with that yet. I just don't know. I'll be curious to see how they're
dangling the carrot.
Yeah, how they work their way out of this one. So
it's like in Lost. They used to do that type of thing in Lost all the time. They would dangle some totally bizarre currents in front of you, and then they would assure you, "Oh, don't you worry. We're gonna tell you what this all means by the end." And then by the end, they're like, "Hey, don't worry about all that stuff that we dangled."
Yeah. God, I hope this doesn't
turn out
like that.
What's important is that we're all friends. What?
I hope this doesn't turn out like that, because that was kind of disappointing.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, wasn't it? Okay, well, let me tell you about what we're into. I have been waiting for something for 6 or 7 years now that finally was revealed this week, and I couldn't be more excited than I am right now. But let me tell you about one of my best summers ever, Lewis.
Whoa.
Have you had a great summer that you remember? One of my best summers was 2012. And I'm a big gamer. Many of you probably know this. I play a lot of video games. I love video games. I don't talk about them very much, but I'm a big fan and I follow what's going on in the gaming world and stuff. And that year, that summer, I was planning on going to this event called PAX, the Penny Arcade Expo. It's this gigantic video game convention that happens in Seattle. It used to just be in Seattle. It started off in Seattle, and then it slowly started happening in other cities around the world. They do one in the South, on the East. They do one in Australia now. But I think at that time, it might have still just been Seattle. So it was a really big deal, right? And all the major video game companies from all around the world all come and show you what they're going to be releasing in the fall and, you know, coming into the next year and stuff. And there was this game called Borderlands. They were showing off Borderlands 2, which was a game that I wasn't super familiar with, but when they showed it to me, it raised my intrigue. And the more I learned about it, the more I fell in love with this game. And it turned out to be one of the most fun games that I've ever played. I probably spent, I don't even know, 75 hours playing it. And not only did I play it, but I would watch people on YouTube for years. I still do this. Play that game, talk about that game, because there was so much nuance and so much going on in the game. And I loved the world and the atmosphere that they had built and the stories and the narratives. And so I just loved to be immersed in that game. And I played Borderlands 2, absolutely loved it. And it just always reminds me of that great summer I had where me and my friends were at the Penny Arcade Expo, watching it for the first time, starting to get excited about it. And that year, every year they would have this huge party afterwards. They don't do this anymore, of course, but early on, to draw people in, they would have all these great parties and give you like food and drinks, and they would rent out entire arcades so you could go and play the games and just hang out with your friends. And so it just kind of reminds me of this really great summer and all the time after that I had playing this really wonderful game whenever I, you know, talk about Borderlands or play it. Anyway, it's been years since Borderlands 2 came out, right? And they just didn't talk about it at all. And the studio that made Borderlands focused on other games. And I kept thinking to myself, they keep making these other games, but Borderlands was a cash cow for these people. It would be like Apple announcing an iPhone and then saying, oh, we'll make another one eventually, but enjoy the, you know, the iPhone that we made in 2012. Eventually, we'll get around to making another one. And you're like, you should be making one of these every year. This is an unbelievable device. You should be focusing on this. But they kept releasing other games. Yesterday, after years and years and years of waiting, they finally demoed the gameplay from the new version of the game, Borderlands 3, which I'm sure at least some of our listeners watched. And I just sat back and I was getting goosebumps. In fact, Lewis, I was at full mast.
Whoa.
For like an entire day. An entire day. Now, I will caveat, some people on Twitter were like, why do you make all these sexual innuendos when you do the show? I will have you know, my dear listeners, I have never made a sexual innuendo on this show. Full mast, when your nips go to full mast, is not an indication of sexual arousal. No, it is an indication of pure, unadulterated excitement. All your muscles condense and your nips, they go to full mast.
Jeez. Thanks for clearing that up.
it's a physical reaction to an intense emotional excitement, oftentimes initiated by an Apple device. Not sexual in any way.
You might want to get that checked.
Not sexual in any way. I just want to make that clear because I had some people get a little upset with me on Twitter, and they're like, why do you keep making these innuendos? They're not innuendos. It's like when you're cold. You know, if you get cold, all your muscles tense up, you get goosebumps, and you know, the nips, they go into their elongated state. It's just the body's natural response to a physical stimuli that is completely asexual. That is what happens to me and many of our Cultcast listeners. I've had many confirm the same response. When they see something that really excites them, like a video game, a new iPhone, an iPad maybe once in a while, or a new MacBook Pro. Oh, don't even get me started on MacBook Pro. I have to put on my Band-Aids. Anyway. Anyway, I was watching this game, and I was like, thank you, God. We're in a strange time in video games. Video games, the nature of games are changing. People are pursuing these free-to-play models where they release a game that's either free or actually costs money and then inundating you with in-game purchases to buy components of the game that you want or need. I was watching this gameplay. They didn't have any of that stuff built in. And they took the experience of Borderlands and they made it better. They made it bigger. They made it more beautiful. They gave us everything that we wanted and more. And I was, it's rare that your anticipation of something is not deflated when you see the actual tangible realization of that anticipation, right? Usually, like, it's like the sequel to a movie. You go see it and it's never as good as the original movie was. It's more of the same, but you could tell it's just a money grab oftentimes. It doesn't look like that's what this is. It looks like a real work of love that the developers took their time to craft and create a whole new experience with all the built-in familiarities that you know and love and are giving us another epic experience to enjoy again. And you could tell they were emotional when they were showing it. They've been working on this, crafting it for years and years, and it must be hard for them to build this and not talk about it. And the fan response was cathartic. We were excited. We're so happy to see this product finally come to life, and it looks like it's exactly what we were hoping for. And that is what I'm into this week. I've been watching the streaming footage that they demoed over and over again. They invited all these different Twitch streamers, like 200. They flew them all out to watch the unveiling of the game and then play the game and stream it live on Twitch. So there's all this footage of all these people playing the game for the first time. So there's all this content that you could go and watch. And the game just looks unbelievable. Anyway.
I've never played this game. What is it? It's like a post-apocalyptic game or something?
Yeah, kind of. It takes place on another planet, actually. So I don't know if it's post-apocalyptic.
Another
post-apocalyptic. But it's irreverent and fun and funny, and it's you could tell the gamers or the people that design the game are designing it for the fans, and they're not trying to be all politically correct and stuff. They just want to make a great experience, which is rare a lot these days, especially in the world of comedy, and their games tend to have a pretty strong comedic tone. And so you'll find yourself playing the game and they'll do something and you're like, wow, I can't believe they actually did that in today's climate, because it seems like they would get a lot of hate for it. But I think ultimately most people just want to have a good time and want to experience a great narrative. And they know that, and they're brave enough to create experiences that might be a little risque, you know, but are still fun and can be enjoyed by, you know, most people.
Most normal people.
Most regular gamers are probably going to love this game. Borderlands 3, I don't mind giving them free press at all, because I had an incredible time watching their unveiling events. And I know I'm not the only one who is probably excited about that, but that's my pick. Should we go ahead and wrap it up there, Lewis?
Sure, unless you want to play a little game.
You sounded creepy when you said that, like that guy from Saw.
Yeah, let's skip the game then.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, let's go ahead and wrap it up. Let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the cool guests we have for you guys this week. But you know what? I heard that next week we're going to be debating the best Apple CEO of all time. Is that right, Lewis? Is this going to be something that we actually do?
Yeah, maybe even a live video, huh?
Oh, well, Leander was talking about it. I don't know. I'm like, is there a discussion to even be had on this topic? But maybe there is. Maybe Leander's going to have some surprise picks. Anyway, that's all the cool casts we have for you guys this week. If you want to come say hi or reach out to us about any of the stories we discussed on today's show, we're on Twitter. I'm at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. Lewis is at Lewis Wallace. This has been the CallCast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the CallCast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening. And we'll see you guys next week. The best CEO of all time discussion. Lewis?
Yeah, man.
What can you say? What can you possibly say? It's Gil Emilio. There's nothing else to say. Hands down.
Sure.
Everyone's favorite. Everyone knows him. Everyone loves him. He's the life of the party. Gil Emilio.
Yeah.
Sharp dresser.
You should hit the aural exciter for your next week.
You think so?
Yeah, fix it in post.
Aural excitement activated. You're just jealous.
I am. I feel very, very timid now.
Because your voice didn't have the same spectacular quality that mine had this week.
Very disappointing.
I can tell when you turn it on, it definitely adds some Casey Kasem to your voice for sure.
Yeah.
You go from, hello, we're going to talk about Apple this week, to, hi, my name's Arifin Elijah, host of the Cultcast. Welcome to America's favorite Apple podcast. Who wants to talk about iPods?
Yeah, it's weird. The big boom thing, I didn't notice that much, but then, you know, maybe that's the low-end hearing.
The big bottom.
Oh, big bottom, mean? Sorry.
The oral excitator and the big bottom. Leave it to those Aussies to work some jokes into their hardware features.